Great to have you along here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, turning our attention now to social media and online influencers. Wow. You know, we're talking about word-of-mouth advertising a little bit. It's always been the holy grail for business, and conventional wisdom says that we pay a lot more attention to it than we do, obviously, to paid advertising. We're going to talk a bit about that with Don Stanley, faculty associate in my department, Life Sciences Communication at the UW-Madison. He teaches social media and web courses, and he's also the owner of 3 Rhino Media. It's a social web and strategy business. Been with us a few times. Great to have him back. And certainly hoping you'll join in, too. Do you use social media? Why or why not? What kinds of platforms do you use? We'll probably be talking about some things today that you may not have heard of before. This guy keeps up. He's up to date, up to the minute on what's going on out there. So questions, give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. We'd love to hear from you. And Don Stanley, welcome back.
Thank you so much. Pleasure to be back.
Well, this word of mouth, I was just talking about word of mouth, and that's kind of the holy grail for businesses. Is there a social media version of word of mouth? I think there is.
Oh, no question about it. And it's one of the most interesting parts of looking at how social media is changing what happens, and that people can now identify who what are called citizen influencers, which are people who could be like you or me, that when we say something or share something, it gets a lot of attention. So it's something that was back in the old days before mass marketing and mass media actually existed, where in different communities there would be citizen influencers, whether it be a Paul Revere or Ben Franklin. But now businesses and organizations and individuals can find those folks online and can connect with those and create some pretty interesting things.
Huh. And how do businesses decide who has online influence and who they want to get as their supporters or their proponents?
That's a great question. One of the biggest, in the last couple of years, there's been these social scoring tools are what they're called. Mm-hmm. And there's 3 major ones. The biggest one by far is Clout, K-L-O-U-T. And Peer Index is another one. And then Cred, K-R-E-D, is a third. And what those do is those monitor your social activities. You do have to sign up for them, but they will monitor your activities. And what they do is based on it's almost like the Coke formula, at least for Clout. They don't have a very transparent scoring system, which is one of their criticisms. But what they do is they assign you a number between 0 and 100. There's only one person who has 100 right now. 100 is the best score you can have, meaning that if you share somebody, everybody's going to probably hear about it. And that's Justin Bieber. So
he has a score of 100.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does. But based on that, what companies do is they try to find people in particular areas or arenas of influence, whether it's talking about automobiles, talking about baby products, all different types of things. And for example, in my case, I've received a $200 dinner. I've received free books. I've received Kindle Fires. I've received all kinds of gifts from individuals and organizations when they see the score that I have, which really isn't that high of a score. I actually don't work at it. There are people who literally work at it specifically to increase that score. But yeah, it's very, very interesting.
What would a good score be? Well, 100 obviously is a good score. But what would be an average and a little better than average score?
An average score is around a 20. So okay. The average person has around a 20, and this is according to Clout. Cred has a 0 to 1,000 rating scale. And with Clout, what they do is they break it up where it's like 0 to 20 is you're really not very active, you're not doing much, and therefore you don't have much influence in your communities. Then it goes like up to 35. There's a like kind of a beginner level, and then 35 to 50, and then or 49, and then once you hit 50 and above, you start getting into the more serious influencers.
You can join in, by the way, with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. Dan in Beloit up with us now. Dan, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Dan.
Thank you. Well, I had this discussion with my father yesterday. If they own a hotel over in Genoa, Wisconsin, they're real big into fishing and hunting and all that, pretty much what they do. It's called the Big River Inn over there. And I was speaking to my dad yesterday. I was actually listening to another program on NPR about social media yesterday, and I decided I'd look up their Facebook page and realized they had a whopping 23 likes in the last 3 years. And didn't have the ability to share the page, didn't have the page linked to their website, you know, didn't have anything done like that. And it was a huge form of free advertising. Mm-hmm. So I actually called my father, and just to speak to him about that this is huge. I ran a charity a little while ago, and Facebook spread that charity like wildfire.
Mm-hmm.
And so I knew a lot about advertising when it came, you know, to using other sorts, that media and other sorts of media and word of mouth. And, you know, his excuse is, well, you know, our customers are hunters and fishermen, don't really, you know, have that kind of, well, then entice it, you know, I mean, raise awareness of Facebook so maybe these people will be, you know, there's a big, you know, as soon as someone knows they can like something on Facebook, for some reason, they do it,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I just kind of had a discussion with him about that. So
I think he's wrong about hunters and fishers not being interested in Facebook.
Absolutely.
I absolutely agree, because I'm a hunter and a fisherman, and I love, now I love Facebook, but I'm on it daily.
Yeah.
And you know, and it really, and I think it really helps spread it, especially the share option, because once you share it, it gets shared with everybody, and then everybody after that.
Yeah. Well, comments, Don?
Yeah, I think, you know, and all of the tools that are out there, one of the keys to remember is they don't all work for everyone. So, for example, I worked with an agency in Milwaukee where one of the things we did was we identified what their business goals and strategies were and found that Facebook was not where their market was. So we ended up putting a lot more energy into Twitter and LinkedIn, got a ton of traction, and it saved the company a lot of money and time and resources going onto Facebook, which was not where their account was. That being said, like the quote-unquote business-to-consumer type content generally does very, very well on Facebook. And, you know, you look at the numbers that you know, of a billion accounts, 500 million are active daily, that the average person checks their Facebook profile multiple times per day. It's one of the first things people in certain demographics do first thing in the morning and last thing at night, even if they don't spend a lot of time on it. It's just really kind of almost like a pub or a coffee shop or the old post office or, you know, where people would go to get information. So you do have tons of niche audience on those. So I know working with the DNR that the hunters and anglers tend to be very active on Facebook, and it can be a lot of value for them.
Yeah. There you go, Dan. Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Did you have another question? Nope, that's
sure.
It. Okay, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Talking with Don Stanley today about social media. What platforms do you use, and how do you use them? How do you different social media options suit different needs and wants for you? Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Well, you were talking about CRED and Peer Index and Clout. So how do they, let's talk a little bit more about how they actually gather information. And I think it's a little different for each one.
Exactly. It is a little different for each one. And basically what they do is they pay attention to how often you're creating content on your networks. And you can connect whatever networks you want. And by saying networks, what I mean is Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn, whatever mm-hmm. tools you want. And seeing how far does that extend. So it's very similar to, you know, what you look at with Nielsen scores and Nielsen ratings for television or radio. And so the idea is when somebody creates something, how far does that reach extend? So one quick example that it's a couple years old now, but it's kind of a foundational example is a couple of years ago, 2009, 2010, Ford Motor Company was looking at bringing the Ford Fiesta vehicle from Europe to the United States. And traditionally what they would do is they would create a big ad campaign saying, hey, we've got this new car that is now going to be available in the United States. the average 30-second commercial, you're looking at least $300,000 to produce, not to mention, you know, TV time, et cetera, et cetera. So Scott Monty, who's the head of Ford Motor Company, came up with the idea that what we'll do is we'll find 100 influencers, young influencers in the United States. We'll give them keys to the car for 6 months, and they have to do 2 video missions each month where they can say anything they want about the car, good, bad, or indifferent. And so at the end of 6 months, they were supposed to have 1,200 pieces of content shared by just these 100 people on whatever platforms they chose. Well, at the end of the 6 months, 60% of the American market was aware of the vehicle, even though there hadn't been a single television commercial, radio ad, TV ad, newspaper ad. It was all from these 100 people, and they had 7.5 million views of their videos on YouTube, over 13 million of on Flickr, picture sharing site, and they had, I forget the exact number, but it was like 2 or 3 million new people register for updates from Ford who had never owned a Ford. And the cool thing about it in the end was looking at the numbers, Ford attributed $1.2 billion with a B, billion dollars worth of car sales to those 100 people who were influencers. And nobody knew them before. It wasn't like a big name like a Justin Bieber, as we talked about earlier, or you or me. It was an average citizen that they identified who had the quote-unquote clout. And paid big dividends for them.
Mary Jo in Milwaukee. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, I'd like to ask 2 quick questions about EdgeRank, where Facebook decides who sees your posts based on how often you interact with them, and then how that's going to affect businesses who now have to pay sponsored ads to reach all the people who've signed up for their fan pages. And whether you think that's going to change the way businesses use Facebook, since all of a sudden it's getting more expensive. And I'll take my question off the air.
That is a great question, Mary Jo. And that's one of the biggest points of frustration with Facebook is how they change. And especially now that they're publicly traded, their goal is not to help the users of their software out. It's to help the people who
investors.
Are investing. Exactly. And so there's a lot of undercurrent. It's looking at some changes in terms of who might be competitors to Facebook, because people are getting frustrated. Most people don't realize that one of the things that happens is only 16% of your updates will go through to your followers.
And we're going to continue that discussion. We'll have some more to talk about, obviously, about that question with our guest today, Don Stanley, Faculty Associate in Life Sciences Communication. You'll be with us right up until 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network. You may use Facebook to keep in touch with friends and family, but more and more you may also be keeping up with businesses that you like as well. How are those companies influencing your opinions, and who have they identified to spread the word about their products through social media, word of mouth? And is it working? Hi, Larry Mueller here. Glad you could join us today on the Ideas Network. Don Stanley is a social media expert, and he's with us today to talk about social media and specifically how businesses decide who will be able to influence others online. And we'd love to hear from you as well. Don's happy to answer your questions when you call in at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org, or go to my Facebook page. You can post a question or a comment there at The Larry Mueller Show. Click like while you're there. We'll send you regular updates on upcoming programs. Back after the news. I just said on the air because Chapter of Day started and it wasn't supposed to start. So we have a little issue there. Larry Mueller here talking really about social media, not Chapter of Day. And we'll have to figure that out as the program goes along here.
Chapter of Day of social media.
Chapter of Day of social media is what we're going to have here as we visit with our guest, Don Stanley, Faculty Associate in Life Sciences Communication at UW-Madison, where he teaches social media and web courses. He's also owner of 3 Rhino Media. Talking with him today about social media issues, and certainly looking forward to hearing from you at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. We'd love to hear from you. And we've had some questions about how businesses might be affected. Don, you were talking a little bit about that.
Yeah, basically one of the things that Facebook is doing is saying that in order to get your content seen, you can promote your post, which means paying to have your content shared, which obviously is turning some people off because what was free is, or no longer is. And so there's kind of a blowback right now in terms of businesses, small businesses and organizations being a bit frustrated that, they're being asked to promote posts and, it can get expensive. You know, there's low cost ways to do things, of course, but, advertising on Facebook is not free and it's getting a bit more costly. So there's a number of businesses and organizations that have contacted us about different things that they can do as alternatives to Facebook. And I think there'll be more small businesses that will continue to be interested in looking at different alternatives for advertising on Facebook.
We have Jerry in La Crosse who has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Jerry. Thanks a lot for calling.
Hi, Jerry.
Hi, Larry. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Good. So I have a small business in La Crosse, and I had some colleagues who said, oh, you need to be signed up with LinkedIn. So I did that, and I get people who want to link with me, but I have really no idea what the purpose is of LinkedIn. So I'm linked with all these people. Now what?
It depends on what you want to do with it. There's a couple of different things you can do with LinkedIn. One of them is to build business networks, and that's what a lot of B2B individuals will do. It's almost like, for lack of better term, like a headhunting service, a traditional headhunting service,
mm-hmm.
Where you can find people that you might want to work with, people you might want to hire, people who might be in your industry that you can co-market one another. Or another way that I primarily use it is a way to build my professional network of people who we share ideas, tips, tools, tactics with one another. So not so much looking to sell as it is to have a place where I can connect with people literally worldwide and say, hey, has anybody dealt with this? Do you have any tips and ideas for how to handle this or that, whatever the topic might be? Those are some big ways to use it. The thing to remember about LinkedIn is the profile of a LinkedIn user is generally college educated, makes over 100K a year. And so they tend to be there for business reasons and networking reasons that help them as well as, could help you. So you want to think about it like going into a networking event similar to that and thinking about, again, what do I want to get out of it? If you're looking to make sales, it's probably not necessarily the best place to do it. It can work in that. But if you're looking at first to just build some networks of people who could potentially become word of mouth folks, like what Larry and I were talking about earlier, mm-hmm. It can provide some value there. There's a gentleman named Neil Schaefer. I always get his last name. I always misspell his last name because I know a couple of different Schaefers and all of them spell it differently. But he's with Windmill Networking out of Los Angeles, California, and fabulous LinkedIn guy. And he has actually a nice LinkedIn ebook, a free ebook available that I would recommend checking out. Windmill Marketing or Networking some good insights in terms of some ways you could start to use it so you feel like you're getting some value out of it rather than being there just because everybody told you to be there.
Which can be frustrating,
I know, as a business owner.
Yeah, very good. And I'm looking forward to Chapter a Day.
we'll get Chapter a Day up one way or the other. Dave Potratz is working on that right now as we speak.
Thanks for the call, Jerry.
Thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate your call. You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. Looking forward to hearing what's on your mind. Ann in Highland, you're next. Hi, Ann.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I have a slightly negative spin on all this. I find it unfortunate that it seems like everything in our society starts moving towards marketing.
Mm-hmm.
This started as a social network, and I utilized it to keep in touch with family and friends. I'm no longer living there. But the changes that are happening, I understand, especially with Facebook, are to change the focus of what Facebook is doing. It's becoming more of a marketing tool. And it just, I don't like to be a consumer. I don't like everything in my life to be pushing something at me, and I really find it unfortunate. And I understand it's a great marketing tool and businesses need that, but there's got to be something left that's just a plain social interaction without somebody trying to get a dime from you.
Well, the one thing I'll say on that is that Facebook never really was a social network, and that's how they make us feel, which is they want us to give away all of our information so they could give information to advertisers to track us better. And so there's a company that's just started that might be interesting to you, and it's kind of an early adopter stage, but it's called Join, J-O-I-N app, just like joining, joinapp.net. And it's a new organization, social tool, I should say, that it's really interesting. Again, it's really new, but what you have to do is you have to pay $36 a year to belong. So unlike Facebook, where it's quote-unquote free and you're the commodity, with JoinApp, you pay a small fee annually to use their tool, but you'll never get advertising. And so instead of you being the commodity, their product is the commodity. Because Facebook exists and always has for advertisers. You know, they just make it convenient for us to get together. But the reality is that, you know, everything you do when you're on Facebook, even if you don't log out of Facebook and go look at a different web browser, they're following you and they're paying attention to what you do. And I know I'm with you on that. It can be very frustrating because you want social space to be social space and business and consumer space to be in those arenas. So you might want to check that out. The other thing, MySpace is actually relaunched with Justin Timberlake, and a lot of people laughed and joked about it at first, but it's looking pretty interesting, and I think they might be playing on some of that where people are upset with Facebook exactly for the reasons that Anne is talking about, and offering some different models. So you might want to pay attention, Anne, to those two. And I'm in complete agreement with you. It gets very frustrating when you're getting served stuff all the time and it's like, you know, you don't want an ad, or, you know, you open a YouTube video and of course there's an ad at the start of it. And it's like, you know, I want away from it for a little bit.
Yeah.
So you might want to check those two out just to see if they might be something of value for you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And we did have a Facebook question from Gigi who wondered, is Constant Contact still valuable as it was before Facebook? My company pays $30 a month for the service. I wonder if Facebook does the same thing as Constant Contact. What are your thoughts on that? So
they're different tools. I mean, probably the biggest thing that Constant Contact is known for is email marketing, which is also a very valuable tool for businesses. I actually have a partner agency out of Boston called HubSpot, and we offer integration a little bit tighter with some things with Facebook. But the reality is, Facebook and Constant Contact and email marketing are really two different animals. So if you're finding value from it, I would stick with the two being separate.
Don Stanley, our guest today, faculty associate in life sciences communication, owner of 3 Rhino Media, social web and strategy business, as we talk with him about social media. We've delved into online influencers a bit with him as we visit with him. Certainly looking forward to hearing what you have to say. Questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions and comments. And let's go back to CRED and Peer Index and Clout, and maybe for people just joining us again, what those are about and how they're being used by businesses.
So basically, those are scoring systems that explain how much influence you have. So if I want to find somebody who's influential in radio, maybe I reach out to Larry Mueller, because mm-hmm. when he talks about radio, there's a lot of people that listen. And there's these huge niche markets. I mean, amazing how many niche, I mean, you name a potential market and there is one that exists, and there's people who influence in that. So the key for businesses is to find who those people are and to reach out to them. Now, a lot of them will reach out to them, like in the Ford example that I spoke about earlier, where there's no strings attached. It's just, hey, could you check out our product and see if you like it? If you feel like writing something about it, great. If you don't, that's fine. But the idea is that if people who have influence are happy with something, they'll share it. And it's kind of like the town crier, so to speak,
yeah.
Where when they say something, people listen, and therefore it helps a company, because advertising is being paid less and less attention to. You know, you think of things like DVRs and TiVos that allow us to skip commercials and satellite radio, those types of things. So what ends up happening is people are paying less attention to those ads, but they do pay attention to what their friends say about a product or a service. So, for example, you know, hey, I'm going to XYZ city. I'm going to Orlando, Florida, as an example. Mm-hmm. Does anybody have any recommendations of where to go? Well, I know that you go to Orlando, so you might reply on Facebook, Don, yeah, check this place out. And so because I know you've been there a lot, I would pay attention to that. And you would then therefore have some influence on, you know, your friends in terms of talking about vacations in Orlando, as an example. And so companies then would want to reach out to you potentially to say, you know, maybe there's some things we can do. I had a friend with this who actually got some free coffee machines out of it. And it was a coffee company that had, I think they were a Leo Burnett client in Toronto, ended up giving this guy with the K-cups. And he was a big coffee drinker, tweeted a lot and put on Facebook a lot about him going out to get his morning coffee before his work. Ended up absolutely loving the product. And based on his promoting the product, he has like 150,000 followers on Twitter. The company ended up getting a number of sales out of that, which, you know, was a lot cheaper than a traditional ad. And it got a lot more attention because when this particular gentleman talks about stuff, people tend to listen.
Hmm. Kate in La Crosse, thank you for joining us. Hi.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
Hi, Kate.
Okay, well, I'm coming from a completely kind of different perspective here. I'm the current Miss Wisconsin. It's a title of the Miss America program, and we use social media marketing to market this wonderful scholarship organization, and not only to market myself and my platform, Take a Healthy Bite Out of Childhood Hunger. And so my take on it is that I'm trying to do exactly the opposite of what businesses are trying to find these influencers. I'm trying to find businesses to sponsor me, convincing them that I am the influencer, that I can promote their organizations. And so far, it's been very successful in, you know, collecting scholarship dollars and sponsorships. So my question is, are businesses moving and looking to move more towards tying their names and brands to nonprofits, where it's a more positive spin-off of a positive, you know, the positive influence in today?
That's a great question. And actually, one of the courses I teach is a social media for social change, where we actually have a guest lecturer from California in that class today. And he's talks quite a bit about that. I think, and the name of the book is The Dragonfly Effect by Andy Smith. And it's really interesting because we were just talking about this yesterday in our interview was that more businesses such as Kiva, and obviously there's big organizations like Nike and Pepsi with their Refresh program from a couple of years ago that are using cause marketing or moving more into cause marketing to show that their businesses or organizations aren't just about selling a product or service, that they do support causes. So when you purchase a product, for example, one of my favorites is Paul Newman's products, where all proceeds after expenses go to charity. And so I pay a little bit more for those products because, you know, you feel like you're doing something. So I think there is definitely growth towards that for sure. And I think what you're doing is extremely smart, which is you do have influence because of the position you're in. And congratulations on being in that position.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate that.
But that allows you to provide some amplification for those businesses as well. So I love that you're using that position in that way. So yes, I do think that the positive value and the good word of mouth, the goodwill that supporting nonprofits or cause marketing opportunities is increasing for sure.
Well, thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling, Kate. I appreciate your call very much. And Sherry in Middleton, turning to you next. Hi, Sherry.
Hello. I have a question about Facebook, too. I was on it a few years ago and didn't like it, didn't want to see bother, and so tried to get off, and I'm considered inactive. But now what I'm finding is that there's information that I don't seem to have access to unless I were to rejoin Facebook. I'm thinking, for example, there's a birding group that shares birding information, what you can see where, and it seems like Facebook is where you have to go to get that information. So I'm feeling squeezed. I don't really want to be on Facebook, and yet I'm feeling squeezed.
I definitely hear you on that. And one of the things that I actually don't use Facebook a ton for my own personal use, just because I have a lot of things going on, and B, some of it is a little frustrating with how the model works. But one of the things that I'll do is set up an email address that I really don't use and put minimal information in, and sign up with Facebook with that. And so it's that one email that's dedicated just to an account like that. Again, I put minimal information about myself in it, and that's the only way that I'll access Facebook. I don't give anything else, but and that will allow you to participate, because there is value in those groups for sure. I mean, to you know, whatever the interest is in, like you said, birding. I mean, that's a great one where you know, people can share information on different places they're going or different things they're seeing or asking questions about stuff, talking about, you know, anything from the ivory-billed woodpecker to eagle sightings and that kind of thing. So that's what I personally would recommend doing if you want to participate in those groups and not feel like you're having to compromise yourself. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thanks a lot for coming. By the way, we're going to be talking about the Endangered Species Act and whooping cranes tomorrow on the show.
Oh,
Sherry,
excellent.
So tune in.
I hope you'll also talk about Act 168 at some point.
We will. 168. Well, you know, I'll make sure we'll be looking into that. And we'll make sure that Judith's already written that down. We'll make sure we do that. Thanks a lot for calling and for your questions. Here we are, a week away from the big election. Have you seen social media used in this election? Has it?
Oh yeah. And one of the interesting things, and I think this was kind of a fallout from what happened with all of the protests and everything in Madison last year, is that it's become more divisive. You know, that people tend to support one extreme or another, and that friendships have been ruined, and families have gotten into arguments, and that generally people are only paying attention to stuff that supports their viewpoint. So unlike 2008, when Obama campaign really leveraged social media, which was emerging at that time in a new and interesting way, you know, the ways that it's being used, instead of bringing new people in like what that campaign did, it's really, you know, each camp talking to people who are in their own camp
and making sure they're trying to make sure that they go to the polls.
Yeah. And the biggest frustration, I think, you know, is that you see is the accuracy of the information that's shared there. I mean, I think that's one of the, you know, you hear one thing, you hear another, and it's like, what do you believe? And so I think that's one of the dangers of paying attention to just what's on. You know, that's one of the reasons I love public radio, is that, you know, you get perspective that's based in fact rather than, you know, some of the stuff that you see on Facebook, for example.
And speaking of Facebook, I should point out that people, you can see our Facebook pages whether you're a member or not. Mm-hmm. So you can always go to our Facebook page and not have to be a member of Facebook.
Yep, which is nice.
Yeah, which is actually, yeah, nice. Deb had a Facebook comment from Deb. MyFamily.com, it's MyFamily.com, is also a tool, nice tool, she says, an alternative to Facebook.
Oh. I had not heard of that one. That's what I love about coming on. I always learn something new.
So it's myfamily.com. I'll have to look into that one as well. So the election cycle, they use social media a lot differently mm-hmm. than this time around.
Yeah, definitely. So the last time was really to try to mobilize people, in particular get younger people or people who are, you know, how social media was used 4 years ago, the types of people who were using it, and the numbers were way different than there are today. I mean, it's much more ubiquitous now. You know, the numbers of people that are using it is just astounding. So at that time, it was trying to get people who were kind of the early adopters but might not be politically involved, interested in sharing their support for, at that time, a candidate who most people didn't really know. But now, you know, people know the players quite well. And with social, you know, anything they say and do is usually captured and shared, good, bad, and indifferent. I see it being quite different. It's not an area of expertise of mine, but it is interesting to just watch and see, again, the stuff that people are sharing and talking about, that it's basically supporting their viewpoints.
And in about 30 seconds, what about being an influencer? How do you become an influencer?
How do you become an influencer? One of the best things to do is to check out a gentleman whose name is Mark Schaefer, S-C-H AEFER. He has a website called businessesgrow.com and wrote a great book called Return on Influence. That's a lot about what this social scoring is and how to start looking at potentially becoming, about working at becoming an influencer.
And people are doing that kind of as a business almost.
They certainly can. You know, it was funny. Mark's one of the biggest influencers in the world. He's a huge name, and I'm lucky enough to have him as a friend and a guest lecturer a lot. And he jokingly put up, because when you don't post content regularly, your clout score goes down. And he said, I'm debating about whether or not to take this two-week vacation I've scheduled for the last 2 years because my number's going to go down. And he did it as a joke, but people started commenting, I'm thinking of skipping my vacation too because I don't want my clout number to go down. He's like, I'm joking.
Don Stanley, thank you so much
you,
for being with us. And thank you for listening. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.